It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com. That's mybradio.com. And of course, on the 77 WABC app. Well, thank you, New York. I know I sound like a broken record. Each week I say it, but it's a very, very big honor. We are in the top 10 according to Nielsen. The Nielsen ratings have us, this show, in this hour, in the top 10. And of course, that's a very special and a big testament to you, the great listeners of this show. And you know how hard we work to curate great content, great guests, and tonight is no different. So buckle in, because we have a great one coming. As the listeners know, this show is all about you. Every single week, we interview C-level executives and ask them the questions that are in your mind. And we cover so many professions and categories, including sales, social media, corporate culture, leadership, strategic planning, entrepreneurship, time management, hiring, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain advice to get you ahead in today's business world. Well, as we do each week, we open with some thank you. Special thank you to the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group. Hoodie, Eliana, Dina, Miriam, Cirilli, Rina, thank you. And to the great folks at 77 WABC, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. And a special shout out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. Mishpacha Magazine, the monthly Take 5 column. We've had a number of the greatest guests that we've had on our show. John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple, Christine Comerford, Tom Cortese of Peloton, Shep Hyken, Chris O'Neill of Evernote, among many other great guests. They were covered in Mishpacha Magazine in the Take 5. And, all subscribers receive it naturally. Otherwise, you pick it up on your newsstand. We're also on C-Suite TV, C-Suite Radio, Audio Boom, Player.fm, iTunes, YouTube. We have a robust YouTube channel. Tonight's show will be up on YouTube on that channel as well. The easiest way to access all our guests is by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. There you can pick up the interview I had with Joe Hart, the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie, Paul Massey of Cushman & Wakefield, Chris McCann of 1-800-Flowers. The list goes on. Dr. Adrian Boise, the chief experience officer at the Cleveland Clinic. Of course, we had Captain Sully Sullenberger on. We've had a really fantastic list of guests, and I guess that's why we're in the top 10, and we appreciate your confidence that week in and week out we'll provide you great content. Well, tonight's guest is also off the charts. He's an NSA Hall of Famer. He is an innovation instigator. He's written books on it. He speaks around the world. He a couple of months ago addressed the Winning Edge 2018 conference at Montclair State University. And, we needed a Mariano, if you will. We needed, he's from Orlando. I'm not sure if he's a Marlins fan, et cetera. But if you say Mariano in the New York area, you need a closer for a conference. And that's why we called on Stephen Shapiro to be the closing keynote. And he certainly held the crowd, and for good reason, because the crowd was smart enough to realize that what he brings to the table will move you. Not, there's a cliche out there, think out of the box, yay. But what happens when someone really comes along and challenges your thinking and gets you to really think differently? Not just cliches, but real, as we say here, tachlis, the real thing. Stephen is going to, he's with me tonight, and we're going to, so stay tuned for tonight's edition, where we're going to talk about how to innovate, how to find better solutions for your company, and lessons from the innovation instigator and why they are so important for your business. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome to Stephen Shapiro. Stephen, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
I am absolutely thrilled to be here tonight.
Oh, this is great. I mean, coming from a while back, seeing you on stage, and then knowing that I'm going to have the privilege of interviewing you live in person is very exciting, very big treat for me. What can I say?
Well, for me too.
Thank you. Well, we're going to jump right in and talk about, you have a book, and the title is pretty in your face, okay? Best practices are stupid, all right? That's, and FAA is not going to throw me off of that. I mean, you know, Jeffrey behaved himself. We know that at the conference. But best practices are stupid. Okay, so, you know, I guess, you know what? Let's take a step back. Tell us about yourself, your title, the Innovation Instigator. What is being an Innovation Instigator all about?
Well, to me, the goal is to help companies grow, because I was with Accenture for a long time. And one of my earlier jobs was to help companies become more efficient, which meant that people lost their jobs. Mm. So I didn't like that. Had a bit of an existential meltdown. So I decided that I'm going to help companies grow. And my goal is to help people sort of cut through the clutter of the traditional ways of thinking about innovation and actually use a little more critical thinking when it comes to innovation.
Okay. So that, now, if I may, just, you know what, best practices too, I'm going to come back to, because I want to talk about innovation. Innovation can mean a lot of different things to different people. What do you mean by innovate? And again, it's one of those words, innovator, innovation. You know, before we get to why it's so important for a company, and you know, you take a look at Amazon where it's at, Apple where it's at because of innovation. But what do you mean when the word innovation? What's your definition of innovation?
Well, let's start with what it isn't. It isn't about technology, which is we get seduced by all these new technologies, whether it's 3D printing or blockchain or virtual reality or AI. They're a means to an end. And the end is to have a business that is relevant in the minds of the consumer. So if you aren't changing fast enough to offer what it is the market expects from you, you're going to be out of business. So to me, innovation is the means of staying relevant. So you have to create value, create incredible customer experiences. You have to be able to, increase your market share through differentiation. It is really just about being relevant and standing out.
That's a great point you raise. Let's say Apple, for example. They create very cool, very simple, easy-to-use products that are packed with tremendous electronics. But you put it very well. It's not that they're in, you're not defining them as innovation, as innovators, because of their products. It's because of the mindset, and the products then follow through to match what they're innovating or the pain point that they're solving in the marketplace. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. To me, you can actually take the word innovation and just reframe it as problem solving, but it's solving more important problems than we typically tend to focus on inside of organizations. It's not the product you create. If the product doesn't create value in the minds of the consumer, which ultimately creates value in the minds of your shareholders or your business, then you're irrelevant. And there's just so many examples of companies that have invested in technologies that have developed solutions that you would say were elegant, but people didn't want it. That's not innovation. That's just being overly clever, and that doesn't help.
My guest this evening is none other than Stephen Shapiro, NSA Hall of Famer. We're going to talk about that later, what it means to get into the Hall of Fame. He's being very gracious. One lucky listener is going to win his book, Best Practices Are Stupid. All you have to do is text over MYB for Mind Your Business to 64600 for a chance to win it. MYB to 64600. And like I tell our great listeners every week, if you don't win it, you could still be a winner by going to Amazon and just, you type in Stephen Shapiro, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. That's how he spells Stephen. Stephen Shapiro, and you'll see his books there. You can get all of them and then be really smart. But if you just want to start with Best Practices Are Stupid, check it out. And again, one lucky listener is going to get it by texting over MYB to 64600. Good luck. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group, marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yusuf Saflis right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than Stephen Shapiro, the world-famous Stephen Shapiro. Just Google him and you'll see exactly what I mean. Or many of you may have actually heard him address crowds in the past. I saw him up on stage when I was at a C-suite event. Special shout out to Jeffrey Hazlett. In Dallas it was. And that's when I kept my eye. I'm like, I got to do something with this guy. You know, this, and that was my aha moment to do something. And thank God we did something a while back. At the Winning Edge Conference, and he graced it. And again, we're very, very deeply appreciative for your presentation.
Well, it was my pleasure, and it was just a fantastic event.
Thank you. Very special. Let's jump back into innovation. Again, you are known as the Innovation Instigator. Now, by the way, how can people, you speak around the world, and actually you service corporate America, maybe before I even go further, I certainly owe it to the audience and any people out there that can avail themselves of your talent. What exactly, you know, is the dream client for you?
The dream client is any organization that actually really just wants to change. For me, it's not about industry because I work in all industries. It's not even necessarily about size. It's really a desire to really make some serious change happen. And when you have that situation, I become very interested in helping you achieve the goal of using innovation to grow the business.
And what's the best way that people should reach out to your company?
I mean, the best way is just my website, which is stephenshapiro.com, again with the PH. And then I have videos and other materials on the site.
Excellent. Well, let's jump back in. What are some of the biggest obstacles that keep organizations from being innovative?
I think the biggest obstacle is our brain, because the brain actually is not wired for innovation. It's actually wired for survival. And so what happens is we end up making decisions which aren't necessarily about change or growth, but they're more about protection. Mm-hmm. So we need to, for example, inside of some organizations, one of the big obstacles is complacency or egos that get in the way, and believing that what we have done in the past will keep us successful in the future, and that's rarely the case. So there's just a wide range of different biases that we have as human beings that prevent us from being successful innovators.
You know, at the conference, you had given the example about this, I don't remember the price tag of that boat that was built, an icebreaker for England, was $100
million.
$400 million. And they threw open the, I don't know, the contest, if you would call it, you know, for people to offer coming up with a great name. Now, In that, maybe actually you could share the story, and then we're going to ask the obvious question is, what is your opinion on crowdsourcing information in today's day and age?
Yeah, so that particular one was out of the UK. They have this $400 million Antarctic Explorer. So they ask people to, I mean, I guess you could call it a contest, ask people to submit the name that they wanted the boat to be called, and then people got to vote. And in the end, the winning submission, which many people have heard of, is Boaty McBoatface. and what's fascinating is people look at that and they say, okay, well, maybe the second place one was really close by, or right, maybe it was only a handful of people who voted. It was actually about 125,000 people voted for Bodie McBoatface. The number two option was only about 35,000 people. Okay. So you can see that what happens is in the world of crowdsourcing, there's actually something called mob sourcing. And mob sourcing is where the passionate few decide that their opinions, their ideas, their personal agendas are more important than the greater good. And so we can't really always count on voting and crowds because there's, although there is sometimes wisdom in crowds, there's also a lot of ridiculous things that come out of crowds.
Okay, so let's hold on to this. We know that on Facebook or LinkedIn in particular, or even now with Twitter, there are times when people will have an open voting process. Is there any value for a company to pick up new ideas, whether it's, when I'm just talking about R&D, but even, let's say, a marketing company that wants to get an idea and just test it out there, and it's not something that's too confidential. Is there any value to that?
Yeah, look, there is always value in asking people to provide input. Here's one of the things which I found, though, is that crowds are better at eliminating the bad ideas than they are at evaluating the good ideas. So what that means is if you're going to ask people, you know, if you've got a couple of different options, typically the best thing to do is say, which ones do you absolutely think are bad? And they'll be better and more effective at that. But here's the bigger challenge is unless you're targeting the universe, these are very misleading because like if I were to ask my Facebook, you know, people between my page and my personal, I have close to 10,000 people on there. If I ask them, you know, what should I do with the title of my next book? It might not make any sense because they're not my target audience necessarily, especially on my personal page. So we need to understand who we're asking these questions of and what their mindset is. I find sometimes the best thing to do is to ask the people who are actually potential buyers and have some conversations. And there's a lot we could talk about this, but that's sort of like we always have to recognize who we're asking doesn't necessarily meet the people who we're selling to ultimately.
Okay, so if you could stay on that, because that's really a fascinating topic. When someone puts something out there on social media, so they are attracting a wide audience, although to a big degree we know that social media is built on followers and it's being shown primarily to people that because of AI and all that. But there it's not like asking, if let's say you want to ask people about a new book. So you turn to some of your buddies, you turn to Shep Hyken, you turn to Jeffrey, and you know you're going to get, you know, straight answers and you know how to evaluate their advice based on their world wisdom, et cetera. When it comes in a major crowdsourcing arena, then you're right. It's open. And you alluded to this before. There may be someone who's just very active or maybe has too much free time on his hands and he'll just continue to pound with, yeah, I think it should be X and Y. And meanwhile, you know, this is, it doesn't really make sense. That's just not, they don't get it. So I guess my question is, still coming back to the social media platform for crowdsourcing, let's say the name of a new book, how would you go about doing it so that you would then say, you know what, the feedback that I'm getting is really making sense?
Again, for me, if I'm using social media and assuming a wide reach, okay. So the nice thing with at least a Facebook fan page is that the people who are there are probably more interested in my topic. And what's nice with Facebook and even Google AdWords is you can use them to target particular groups.
Right.
So there are some book titles which they tested different titles by running Google Ads, and they saw the click-through rates. And so when they had more click-through rates, they knew that they had a better title.
Right.
So that's actually, in some respects, a more scientific way of doing it than just asking somebody's opinion. Because if somebody's taking the time to click, that means they are actually showing real interest as opposed to, yeah, I like this one, I like that one, don't like that one. Not as valuable necessarily because the unconscious mind is actually what makes the real decisions. And when you ask people for their opinions, it's the conscious brain that actually is going to be providing the insights and therefore they're not as valuable.
Could you stay on that? Again, the conscious brain is the one that's providing the, like you explained that. That's fascinating.
Well, so, I mean, basically, if you look at the decisions that we really make, most of them are not driven by intellect. They're driven more by
survival.
Survival, but also just something deeper. I mean, that subconscious part of the brain which makes certain decisions. I mean, like a well-worn old example is when Coca-Cola decided to change their formulation. People consciously said, we like New Coke, But the thing is, people had a visceral reaction to the change of a formula that they loved. So people might say they're open to change, doesn't mean when push comes to shove and they have to put their money where their mouth is, that they're actually willing to change. And it's that unconscious brain, which is driven more by emotion than it is by intellect, that makes those decisions. It's why when you are making decisions to buy something, in many cases, you can rationalize as much as you want to support your subconscious beliefs. So you might, for example, you're working with a salesperson, mm-hmm. and you decide you want to buy from the salesperson for whatever reason. Even what they're selling might not be as good as what somebody else is offering. In your mind, you can somehow reconfigure so that it actually fits your mental model. Because at the end of the day, our subconscious, our emotional minds make all those big decisions.
So this is what you touched on at the conference, the confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias is part of that for sure.
You know, we had Sylvie DiGisto on the show actually a couple of years ago, and she also explained it so well. I always show that clip over and over again, about that, the way she said it. We look for proof, we make a decision in those first few seconds. We decide, do we like the person, do we not like the person, and then things fall into place. In fact, I'm going to share a story that happened here at Bottom Line. Obviously, I'm going to spare the details because it's confidential. I don't want to reveal anything. But we pitched a name. We also do names of companies and operations and organizations. We pitched a certain name to an organization. We said, we recommend this name. And we gave them choices. They said, it's interesting, but we're not really, none of them are speaking to us yet. Show us some more ideas. We sent them more ideas. They also said, still not clicking. Let's go to another wave. Now, at some point, you're burning your, spinning your wheels. Okay. Then, and it's dragged on for around too long, 3-4 weeks, whatever the case was. And we knew we had some winners in there. Like, it just didn't make sense. We then had a conversation with the client, and the client was open enough to admit it. He said, something that you suggested in the very first round actually is really, really good. But I think I didn't approve it because there was someone involved with that concept who I didn't like. The person was open enough to admit it. They said, now that I think about it, this person's out of the picture, that's actually a really, really good one, and I think we'll go with that one. Meaning that they had killed a concept, but weren't honest enough to admit it, but it was that confirmation bias that just scuttled it. People have to be aware of that.
Well, absolutely, and that's a perfect example of how relationships impact rational decisions. So we're not rational necessarily when we make decisions, and we can try to analyze things. Like one of my favorite quotes is from Scott Cook at Intuit. He said, "For each of our failures, we had spreadsheets that looked awesome." I just think that is so brilliant because I know, look, I've created 1,000 spreadsheets over the years trying to justify a new business, a new product, a new business model. And when the numbers don't work out, what do? You change the numbers. And somehow you always have a spreadsheet that proves it was a great idea. And that, to me, is one of the things that kills innovation.
With that, I must ask you the next question. At its core, what is the difference between creativity and innovation? Or is there a difference?
Yeah, I think there's a big difference. In fact, one of my beliefs is that creativity is killing innovation inside of organizations. Because what most companies seem to think is that we need more ideas, that all ideas are good ideas. It's about quantity. And the issue is, if you had an infinite amount of time, money, or resources, that might work, but we don't. We're busy. We need to focus. And so what happens is they will create idea management systems, suggestion boxes as means of people providing their insights and input. The problem is everybody has an opinion, suggestion, idea. It doesn't mean it's good. And in most suggestion boxes, after a short period of time where maybe get the low-hanging fruit, mm-hmm. you will have usually on average less than 1% of the submissions that are considered valuable, which means that 99% of the time, thinking about the problem, submitting the problem, and evaluating the problem or the solution is a waste of time. And it's not a very efficient process. And so this belief that creativity and ideas are what we want is actually causing companies to implode. And that's why innovation has been such a failure in many companies, is because they collapsed creativity and innovation. Innovation is an end-to-end process that starts with an issue, problem, challenge, or opportunity, and ends with the creation of value. Creativity is part of the process, but it's not the process.
So if I may, to play devil's advocate for a moment, you take a typical company, the CEO is, his mind is constantly, churning for new ideas, et cetera. And I have heard in the past the recommendation that they should open it up and let their team know that, hey, we are open to ideas, because sometimes we know, even at creative agencies, there's been stories that the bookkeeper or the receptionist may come up with the radical great idea. Oh, actually, you did touch on that, and that's actually feeds right into, you know what? you talked about that as a thing, meaning that it's not only the creative team that you should be turning to for a concept, but throw it open, because you never know where the great idea may come from.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, the big shift is moving from ideas to solutions to important problems. So here's the thing. Even when you ask people for ideas, you're still asking them a question. The question we're typically asking is, how do I improve the business? That's sort of the default question. Mm-hmm. The problem is, when you ask abstract questions, you end up with a lot of abstract solutions. So, and they tend to be very low value. And so what happens is, in most suggestion boxes, when companies launch them, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, they'll have success. At that point, almost always consistently, the value drops, and either the quantity of submission goes up, but the value goes way down, or just the submission quantity goes down and the value goes down even further. So that's when we start to move towards what I call challenge-centered innovation. And basically, at that point, instead of saying, we want you to solve the problem, how do we increase revenues, or what are your great ideas, we ask very specific questions that are important to us, like, how do we create new products that will allow us to compete against this company in this situation? Or how do we leverage this particular technology in a way that allows us to boom, 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 whatever it is. So now we get more specific. And that, interestingly enough, the human brain loves constraints when it comes to innovation. So if I gave you a blank sheet of paper right now and said, just give me 50 ideas, you would come up with a lot of ideas, but they're going to be like all over the place. They're not going to be very good. Right. But if I said, here's some constraints, here's a problem that we need to solve, or an opportunity that we have, how would you solve this? Your brain loves the fact that you have these boundaries, and it helps you think more clearly. Now, the important thing, obviously, is to make sure you're asking the right questions the right way. And as you
heard, maybe you could talk about that. I love it. Reframe the question.
Well, because look, you can change one word in a question to get completely different solutions. So I talked about, like, NASA, they wanted to find a way of, basically bringing a washing machine into space. That was a silly idea, because there's no gravity, didn't work. So they asked the question, how do we get clothes clean?
Right.
Which ends up being about cleaning fluids, and very straightforward. But then they changed one word, and it was, how do we keep clothes clean? Now we moved away from cleaning fluids to material science and antimicrobial. So it's one word can have a profound impact on the range of solutions that you're going to develop. And what ends up happening is, we formulate a question in our mind, and then we jump to solutions, as opposed to staying in the question. Einstein reputedly said, if I had an hour to save the world, I'd spend 59 minutes defining the problem, 1 minute finding solutions. And I find just people are running around spending 60 minutes solving unimportant problems.
So that's just, before we go to commercial break, an important takeaway for companies is, number one, if you have a particular challenge and you want to crowdsource, make sure to frame the question in a very specific way. Shouldn't just be open-ended. How can we grow the business? It should be rather, we're in this particular industry, we developed product X and Y. Here is the challenge. What would you propose as a solution? I mean, to box it in.
Yeah, but you don't want to box it in too much, because, like I say, the Goldilocks principle, you can be too soft and abstract, or you can be too hard and specific. The goal is to be just right. And we sometimes ask questions that are solutions masquerading as questions, or they're past-based, like bringing a washing machine into space is too narrowly defined. Okay. So in that situation, they needed to open it up a little bit. So you just have to, and after a while, you get good at it, you play with it, and you can come up with really, really profound questions where you can get solutions so much faster than you've ever done before.
And I guess the next takeaway I would say is that be open to tweaking the question.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the key.
Stephen Shapiro is my guest. He authored the book. He authored many books, but the one we're talking about tonight is Best Practices Are Stupid. Stephen Shapiro is a sought-after, world-renowned speaker. Just a little perspective here. The NSA, the National Speaker Association, I believe has 226 Hall of Famers.
Sounds about right.
I think it's 226. In fact, I spoke with someone recently who's been in the NSA for a while. I'm obviously not going to identify the name. And I said, and this guy's a renowned speaker. I said, are you in the Hall of Fame? He says, rats, you know, I didn't get in yet, you know, but he's in the Million Dollar Club or whatever it is. You know, so he's certainly well-respected, but it's quite an honor, you know, to get into that elite group. I mean, we were treated to have Jeffrey Hazlett and Stephen Shapiro on the same stage. So, Stephen, you know, just on that note about being in the NSA, have you been to every continent in the planet, or what's been your wildest location that you've addressed an audience?
I don't think I've been to Antarctica yet. I've been to 50 countries. I've given speeches in 50 countries. You know, and I love every place that I go is just so fascinating. I mean, I think that's one of the great opportunities, being able to see the world. And I just spoke in Kuwait not too long ago, which was just in a really amazing country because it's so driven by oil, and the lifestyle is different because the oil generates money. Whereas you go to some other places and there's poverty. And so it's just interesting to see just all these different cultures and economies around the world. And I think the thing which I've learned of is there is no one-size-fits-all solution to anything. So not just for a particular industry or particular company, but even countries have cultures, which mean that the processes that you use, the approaches you use to drive change, have to meet the needs of those cultures.
Right. And you actually addressed it. We'll touch on it after the break, how it's healthy to involve yourself with people outside of your industry. I can't wait to get to that. We're going to get to that right after the break. But before we do, I want to remind the listeners, our giveaway this evening is Steve's book, Best Practices Are Stupid. One lucky listener is going to win it. All you have to do is text over MYB, that's for Mind Your Business, MYB, to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to get it. Otherwise, you can get it on Amazon or in bookstores nationwide. Again, text over MYB to 64600. One lucky listener is going to win Stephen's book, Best Practices Are Stupid. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
Is your business owed money? Are you frustrated with trying to recover past due funds and worried you may not get paid? At Ginny Debt Collection, we know dealing with debt collection can be a stressful endeavor. With more than 15 years serving clients nationwide, Ginny Debt Collection's comprehensive hands-on services help your business efficiently recover past due funds, improve cash flow, and develop strong customer relationships. Call us at 917-400-3253. Or visit GinniDebtCollection.com. That's G-I-N-I DebtCollection.com.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500 or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than the world-renowned Stephen Shapiro, NSA Hall of Famer and author of many books. And tonight we're specifically talking about his book, Best Practices Are Stupid. And of course, it's all about, at its core, it's all about innovation. Steve, before the break, I touched on this. It's something you mentioned at your presentation, at your speech at the Winning Edge, and it was very insightful. You recommend that leaders also either become part of or read or whatever the case may be, you'll explain, areas outside of their particular interests. And I'll give as an example, you're someone that specializes in innovation. Whether you have a fascination or not, you make it a point to familiarize yourself or be part of groups that include magicians, because you feel that takes you out of your zone rather than just hearing the same information over and over again, the predictable information, because it's in your group. Perhaps you can explain. It was very fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good example. So when I look at innovation, our goal is to make the possible possible, and magicians regularly make the impossible possible. And so a lot of my best friends are magicians. I'm a magician wannabe than I am a real magician.
Okay.
But I am fascinated not so much with the performance of magic as I am the thought process of creating illusions. And if people took more time to actually study magic and deconstruct magic and understand the way that illusions are created, it would actually help people shift their own brains and help them come up with better innovations. So I call these purposeful tangents. And a purposeful tangent basically means that it is something that is tangential to your industry or your function, but it's not the same. So I'll give you my favorite example. It's a group called Pumps and Pipes.
Okay.
So Pumps and Pipes is a group of cardiologists and a group of people from the gas pipeline industry, and they get together on a regular basis, and they share what they know about the cardiovascular system and how it applies to the transmission of gas. What they share in common is the transmission of a fluid through a tube. So it's purposeful in putting together, even though one's
so
about
smart.
Biology and the other one's about, you know, big metal pipes. So it's really valuable for people to start thinking about, where can I study that's related to what I'm doing? If I'm in a hospital and I'm in, you know, admissions, how do I talk to hotels, talk to retail, look at how Apple checks people into the Genius Bar, whatever it is. Stop looking inside your industry all the time and start asking who else has solved similar problems and look to them for better solutions.
Okay, so actually it's interesting because you clarified the point. I mean, a person, maybe you're not advising against it, but should not necessarily go off into an abstract that has no relevance. I mean, they should find, like, the idea about the pipes, again, the company is Pipes and
Pumps and Pipes.
Pumps and Pipes and cardiologists, because it's a different vertical, but at the same time, there is overlap, especially in a creative way or in an innovative way. Would you say also that it might pay for them to study how aerodynamics works, or then for that there may be lower value, and then that's just a matter of if you have the time or not?
Well, it's interesting. So if you look at the quality of breakthroughs, the further away you are, typically the better the breakthrough. So I've worked with one company who was in like residential plumbing type of thing, and we looked at botany and plants and how do plants move water through their whole system. So there's a lot that you can learn there. Now, when you're closer to the industry, so Pumps and Pipes is great because it's a very close connection, fluid through a tube. As you move further away, you increase the potential for a bigger breakthrough, but you reduce the likelihood of finding it. So the efficiency of your time drops. So that's why I typically recommend a purposeful tangent. If you don't have a lot of time, at least find something that's related to what you're doing. You'll have a high likelihood of finding some really powerful solutions quickly.
Such great advice. Such great advice. If we could just also touch on your four-step process for innovation. This is really fantastic. Again, the four steps, I'll just say it out. Focus, ask, shift, and test. Perhaps you could describe what that is about. And again, this is for the listeners out there, the many small to medium-sized businesses. This is a fantastic takeaway on to goad you on on how to innovate.
So you'll notice that focus, ask, shift, test spells FAST.
Yes.
So I call this my FAST innovation model. And the reason for that is because when you use this, you're going to increase your innovation ROI tenfold, and you'll be able to achieve it faster than traditional idea-driven models. So the focus part is about differentiation. So one of the beliefs is that we should be solving all problems. We want all of our people innovating everywhere. And that actually, again, dilutes our energy. So I always say innovate where you differentiate. Figure out what sets you apart from the competition. Why do people do business with you? And your innovation efforts should focus on those differentiators, not everything else. The ask part we talked about, asking better questions, it's about reframing the questions. I always say, don't think outside the box, find a better box. The issue isn't the expansiveness of your thinking, you're just looking in the wrong place. Constraints are helpful. We also touched on the shift part, which is about shifting your mindset in terms of recognizing that expertise is the enemy of innovation. The more you know about a topic, the harder it is for you to think differently about
it. Maybe
you
can even elaborate. That's such a great concept. Because usually people think, right, expertise is great.
It is great. And it leads to incremental innovation. So what happens is when you have a lot of experience, again, it comes back to confirmation bias and a number of different biases in the brain, we start to limit what we're able to actually see. So we lose our peripheral vision. And as a result, the solutions we develop in the future tend to be based on what we've seen in the past. But the big breakthroughs almost always, and there's numerous studies that show this, come from somebody from a different discipline, a different industry, a different function, who was able to look at the problem with fresh eyes. So that expertise is incredibly valuable because it leads to innovation, but you need to get rid of it sometimes in order to build the bigger, more radical innovations. And that's where we come down to the asking who else has solved a similar problem, which to me is just an incredible question to ask yourself when you're trying to find solutions, because the reality is somebody somewhere has solved the problem you're looking to solve. But you have
in
to
a different vertical.
In a different vertical, but you have to reframe the question.
That's great.
And then the test part is, you know, we become so in love with failure, but I think that's actually a terrible thing to say that failure is the goal of innovation. Failure is an unintended consequence of innovation, but it's not what we want to strive for. What we actually want to do is experiment. And experiments, when you disprove a hypothesis, so let's say I think I've got a great idea and I go test it and my test tells me it's not such a great idea. That's not a failure. That's actually a successful innovation. What happens is if I run an experiment and the evidence I get tells me, because of confirmation bias or whatever, that it's a great idea,
okay,
and it's not, that's what leads to failure.
My guest is Stephen Shapiro. Folks, just in case you're tuning in, no worries. As you know, by Tuesday morning, this entire episode will be up on the channel. The easiest way to access the whole interview, the podcast, you want to listen to it on your computer, etc., it will be up at mybradio.com. That's mybradio.com. One lucky listener is going to win Stephen's book, Best Practices Are Stupid. This is a wealth of information, a resource in order to get you out of your box and to get you thinking on how to truly be a great innovator. One lucky listener is going to win it. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, text over MYB to 64600. One lucky listener is going to win it. Otherwise, you can get it on Amazon or bookstores nationwide. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftos right here on 77 WABC. We're here with Stephen Shapiro, NSA Hall of Famer and author of, by the way, I correct myself. During the break, Stephen reminded me very politely. Thank you for not correcting me on the air. But he wrote 5 books, not 4. I'm sorry. He's a polite guy. You know, it's 5. That's a big accomplishment. You know, so I apologize about that. One lucky listener is going to win his book, Best Practices Are Stupid. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. MYB to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win Stephen's book, Best Practices Are Stupid. Well, before the break, we talked about your 4-step process for innovation based on FAST, focus, ask, shift, and test. Well, you also talk about the, you know, differentiation. And digging deeper into differentiation, you have 5 D's on differentiation. Can you explain?
Sure. So this comes back to the focus part of the FAST model. There's 5 D's that I found that if you are missing any one of these, your company's potentially doomed and you'll become a commodity. So the first one is you have to be distinctive. That's actually pretty obvious from the word differentiation, means you need to stand out. There has to be a reason people do business with you and not someone else. The second one is that it has to be defensible. And defensible means that it has to be something which would be difficult for someone else to replicate. I've seen some companies that come up with what they think is a differentiator, and then their competition copies it in 2 weeks, and that just means they did the hard work for the competition. So that's not a differentiator. The next one is going to be disruption proof. Disruption proof basically means that you will stay relevant, that new technologies aren't going to make you irrelevant at some point in the future, whether it's 3D printing impacting the construction industry, whether it's blockchain impacting the financial services industry. We need to at least stay up on some of these disruptions that are taking place. The fourth one may seem obvious, but it's not something that we always are conscious of, and it has to be desirable. Desirable means that people are willing to pay for it. I'm going to just pause on this one for a moment, only because, since we're in New York, one of the examples that I love is the Revel Casino in Atlantic City.
Okay.
So the Revel Casino in Atlantic City, for people who know the story, was built in 2012 for $2.5 billion. Beautiful, gorgeous, sophisticated, classy, high-end casino. The problem was the people who go to Atlantic City aren't. The people who go to Atlantic City go with their kids. They want to go to the beach. They eat hot dogs. And so 2 years later, a $2.5 billion hotel closed its doors, went bankrupt. Eventually, they sold it for like pennies, like $50 million or something, like pennies on the dollar. And in fact, just recently, after all these years, it's being reopened. I think not too long ago, it's being reopened, but they're changing the model because what they're recognizing is that the old model of trying to go for the high roller like you might find in Vegas doesn't work in Atlantic City. So it has to be desirable. It has to be something people will pay for. And then the last of these is just that it's disseminated. And all that means is everybody internally and everybody externally needs to understand this is my differentiator. And we put our energies around that. And as I said before, you innovate where you differentiate.
Now, earlier in the interview, we discussed about involving people with ideas. So I just want to formally ask the question in this way. You mentioned it at the conference. You say that companies should not ask employees or others for new ideas. So therefore, in your words, what is a better approach for finding creative solutions through other people?
So the traditional method for innovation is what would be called idea-driven innovation. So it's driven by somebody submitting an idea. What I advocate is something called challenge-centered innovation, which basically means that instead of focusing on the idea, we focus on the question, and we reframe the question. And when we use better questions as the driver of innovation, we increase that innovation ROI massively because we're focusing on important problems, differentiating problems. We're reframing them so we have better solutions, and we've got other methods for finding solutions. Ideas almost always, if you're doing a suggestion box, come from your employees.
Right.
But sometimes the best solutions come from outside the company or even outside the industry. So when we have questions that we use as the launching pad, it allows us to really expand our thinking, reduce the level of risk, increase the speed, increase the returns, and is really just a fundamentally different shift in how companies innovate.
Now, we often hear that to be innovative, you have to think outside the box, okay? Do you agree with this way, with this approach to being successful in innovation?
Yeah, so everybody loves that term. There's a slide I like to use in my speeches. It's a picture of a cat in a litter box.
Right.
And the cat saying, I don't care what anyone else says. I do my best thinking inside the box. So for me, I say, don't think outside the box. Find a better box. The issue isn't the expansiveness of your thinking. As we talked about earlier, sometimes when you ask big, broad, abstract questions, we actually get big, broad, abstract, and irrelevant solutions. But if we're solving the wrong problem, we'll never get the right answer. And so it's really not about expansiveness, but just changing the focus of where you're looking.
So just to pick up on that, could you please, from your experience, give me an example of how reframing the question can yield a far greater result?
So I'll tell okay. The one that I know that
sure.
you like. So an airport here in the U.S., ask their passengers, what's your biggest complaint? Everybody was loud and clear. It takes too long to get the bags. So they did some analysis, and they found that it took about 15 to 20 minutes for the bags to get from the plane to the baggage carousel. So they spent a ton of money on faster conveyor belts, more baggage handlers, newer technology. They got it from 15 to 20 minutes down to 8 to 10 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars that cost.
It was expensive. Sure. And you know, as in their mind, they solved the problem.
Right.
So they go back to the passengers and they say,
and they did another survey.
Another survey. Now, what's your biggest problem? And they heard it was still the baggage claim process.
Wow. So even though they cut it in half.
Cut it in half. And that's sometimes what we don't recognize is how consumers think. So they started to look at this and they realized that it cost them so much money to get it to 8 minutes that they couldn't get it to 7, 6, or 5 minutes. It'd just be too expensive. And then they had an epiphany. What they realized was that it took the bags 8 to 10 minutes to get from the plane to the baggage carousel, but it only took the passengers 1 to 3 minutes to get from the plane to the baggage carousel. So instead of speeding up the bags, what did they do? They slowed down the passengers. They literally reconfigured the airport. So it would take, on average, 8 to 10 minutes for the passengers to get from the plane to the baggage carousel.
So were the people happier? I mean, like, what was the result of this?
Yeah, so people were happier because when they got to baggage claim, their That's bags were crazy. Waiting for them. The airport's happy because they're walking past stores and shops and
right,
restaurants.
Extra so there's opportunity. More,
extra opportunity. And so the important point on this is that they were solving the wrong problem. They were solving the problem speeding up the bags when, in fact, the real problem was wait time. And wait time is made up of the speed of the bags and the speed of the passengers. But I would go a step further and say it's not that that was even the right question, because there's a lot of different ways you could look at it. So one opportunity is to change the wait experience in baggage claim. So I live in Orlando. People pay hundreds of dollars to wait hours and hours and hours at Disney World, but it's a great experience. So how could we change the experience? Again, that's a different question. So changing the question, it doesn't necessarily give you better answers, but it gives you different solutions that you can then see whether or not they make sense.
Steve, you know, I'd love to have hours on end in order to ask you questions on innovation, but we are running very low on time. Two last questions. You touched on this earlier in the interview, and that is so many people say, you know, in order to innovate, you must fail. That's just a part of the process. You must fail in order to innovate. Do you agree with that assessment?
You will fail. That is an inevitable outcome, or a byproduct, I should say, but it's not the goal. So I hear too many companies say, if we're not breaking eggs, we're not innovating. And I don't necessarily like that as a mantra, because it's saying, please go fail. And, you know, as we talked about before, to me, the key is actually experimentation. And if we're doing good experiments, we'll be more successful. And what happens is, unfortunately, the way we conduct experiments is typically flawed. So we talked about confirmation bias earlier. Mm-hmm. So one of the big issues when it comes to running experiments is, if you believe you have a great idea, you're going to do two things. One is, you're going to run experiments that are designed to prove your idea is great.
Right.
You won't run experiments designed to disprove your idea. The second thing is, when you run your experiments, even when you get evidence that tells you it was a bad idea, you don't see it. You only see the evidence that supports your belief. Yep. So we end up running faulty experiments and we start implementing solutions that fail because we didn't experiment properly. So I don't think the goal is failure. I think the goal is to experiment in a way that reduces those risks.
Okay, so you're being clear. People, don't be afraid. You will fail along the way, but the goal isn't to fail.
Exactly.
Well, Stephen, I can't thank you enough for joining me here on Mind Your Business. As a final takeaway, what would be your closing thought to the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, I think when I look at innovation, it reminds me of a fortune cookie I once got.
Okay.
And it said, you always have the right answers. They just sometimes solve the wrong problems. And I think that is, if there's one thing to take away, is it's never about the answer. It's always about the question. And the questions you ask today in your business and in your life are going to predict the future you have tomorrow. So by changing those questions, you will change your future.
Stephen, thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night at 10 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.